Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Brain Show. I'm your host, Nikhil Slaramer, today joined by Mokwena Maja. Let us get into the first news story of today. And I think we have to talk about the fact that the Speaker of Parliament, Phisa Nkokula, has resigned, both as the Speaker of Parliament and as an MP, and is facing arrest now. This has been coming for a couple of weeks, but she recently decided that she could no longer stem the tide of her arrest after making a last-minute court application, which was denied completely, with a member of the National Prosecuting Authority saying that she, quote, did not have the right to not be arrested. And she has stepped down as the Speaker of the National Assembly, submitting her letters of resignation as Speaker and MP. She said, quote, I have made the conscious decision to dedicate my time and focus to deal with the recently announced investigation against me by our country's law enforcement agencies. She said her resignation was in no way an indication or admission of guilt regarding the allegations leveled against her. I've made this decision in order to uphold the integrity and sanctity of our parliament and apex institution of our system of government representing the people of South Africa as a whole. Now, I have no idea whether these allegations against her are true. I suspect there is definitely some validity to them. I don't think she would be facing this kind of legal trouble if there was not a very serious case to be answered. But I do actually applaud her for resigning. It's been relatively rare amongst ANC members or senior leaders to resign their positions. I think Zweli Mkhize was one of the few who actually did it, who has resigned as a minister after a major corruption scandal in his department. But the Speaker of Parliament is in many ways one of the most important people in our democracy. They are the person who chairs and leads Parliament, which is ultimately the most powerful institution in the country. It's Parliament that can remove the President. It is Parliament that can get rid of Constitutional Court judges. It is Parliament that can change the Constitution. That is the center of our democracy. And the Speaker of Parliament cannot have any clouds hanging over their head. And there were increasingly clouds hanging over the Speaker's head. And so I'm very glad that she has resigned. I think that was exactly the right course of action. And in fact, I would encourage more South African politicians, when they face serious allegations, to resign and fight their battles, not holding on to their political positions. Mokwena, what do you make of this? Do you agree with me? It's also still slightly a mystery as to why, considering how rampant corruption is through senior leadership in government, why the Speaker in particular seems to have gone down in a relatively short period of time.
Relatively short period of time is absolutely right, Nick. And I think just a little bit more on that symbolism of seeing somebody who occupies the highest seat in the legislature or the statute-making authority of the country, one of the branches of government in the country. There's a lot to be commended there about seeing somebody of her ranking submit themselves to the law. It screams and it says a lot about the integrity of the judiciary, and it reinforces some confidence, at least, in the integrity of the justice system in South Africa and of rule of law. I do have to say, on that note as well of symbolism, that I've been quite disappointed in engaging the merits of her case against the interdict, and now in her submissions for why she should be released on bail. Her legal arguments seem to be so poor for me. They seem to be lacking from, again, somebody that's the highest person in the legislation making body and institution of the country.
I think she said in her bail application that she wasn't emotionally or financially prepared to deal with jail. Well, I think most people aren't.
I think that's how it works, that you are forcibly restrained against your own will, right? That you are confined to a prison cell. The whole idea is to deprive you of those freedoms that you would enjoy and those privileges that you enjoy. It is to put you under some level of stress. So yeah, I've been quite disappointed to hear some of her arguments. As to why her in particular, I'm also curious, Nick. I think the state capture made a lot of compelling arguments against a lot of similarly high-ranking members of the ANC, members of government, members of parliament, and you just have not seen enough, I would argue, significant progress made toward having those people arrested specifically on the allegations that are put forward in the state capture. So I would like to see more progress made in the investigations of those cases. I mean, they ultimately brought down a lot of our big political institutions, and they should absolutely be held accountable. But if there is anything to be commendable from this case against the Speaker Nosiviwe, it should be that she did go willingly submit herself for her arrest.
Exactly. Yeah, one does. I've speculated before on the show, and I'll speculate again that maybe she fell afoul of some particular ANC internal politics, and that was why, shall we say, the roadblocks on the way to her arrest and investigation were perhaps removed because we know that there's political interference in how the NPA prosecutes cases. So this, I think, is a positive step, regardless of the reasons for why her case went forward. As you say, important that she resigned, and hopefully she gets a fair trial and all this can be sorted out, either with her being found guilty or not guilty. Okay, let us move on to our next topic, and this is about the concerns around political violence as we head closer and closer to the election. We are pretty close now. We're less than 2 months to go until voting day on the 29th of May. Just a reminder, if you are interested in taking part in that vote, and I encourage you to sign up to our Pledge to Vote campaign, pledgetovote.co.za. Go there, give us your details, and we will sign you up with reminders and a chance to win. I think it's a free voucher to get you to the voting station on the day. It's very important, I think, this election, that every South African who has strong opinions on how the country is going goes out there and votes, and makes sure that their voice is heard. Political apathy is not going to change the way things are going in this country. As part of efforts to make sure that no one is violating the freedom and fairness of our election, the IEC is hosted a number of political parties to sign the Electoral Code of Conduct, something that all parties have to pledge to take part in. It's essentially a list of rules of how you can campaign. You know, you can't bribe people, intimidate people, that kind of thing. One of the reasons this has come into the spotlight, even though this happens every election, is because recently we've seen a senior leader in the new MK party, a guy called Visvan Reddy, on trial for inflammatory remarks that he is accused of inciting public violence with, when there was some question about whether the MK party was going to stay on the ballot, as the ANC was challenging its registration in the electoral court. He made comments at a rally saying that there would be significant trouble if the party was taken off the ballot. There would essentially be riots and violence. His spokesperson says these comments were taken out of context. But Corné, there's been a lot of political violence in recent years in South Africa. We do seem to be seeing a return to it, mostly in KZN, although it is beginning to spread outside of the province. Do you think the MK party is going to increase that level of violence? What do you make of this?
Yeah, well, they, I believe, are one of the parties that have signed that electoral code of conduct that the IEC launched today, which I must say comes quite late considering, like you stated, we are about 2 months away from the elections. And we've already seen the emergence of various acts that go against that electoral code of conduct. This is just one, the statements that Mr. Reddy made. I think you'll remember it was Azapo, I believe, whose big billboard in the middle of Johannesburg was vandalized a few weeks ago. And they too had submissions to make to the IEC about that. And so I think the IEC has been a bit lackluster for me in its handling of some of the statements, the incitements of violence, the actual acts of violence, like you saw with the Azapo billboard. There just hasn't been enough determination on the part of the IEC to hold these people accountable in terms of that code of conduct. But you would ask, how would they if people only signed it today, which again is a problem. Do I expect a lot of violence to emerge from the NK party? You know, Nick, I would hope not. The KZN riots live in very recent memory, and I think we all hold that memory with a level of shock and horror, and would hope that there would be no further incitement and perpetuation of that scale of violence, which I think the NK party certainly has the apparatus for because of President Jacob Zuma and him being a leading figure in that particular party.
And we've already seen the ANC and IFP accuse each other of political violence when there was recently a speech that was interrupted by an ANC member, a speech by the Prime Minister of the Zulu Kingdom, had his speech interrupted by an ANC minister who said that he was campaigning during a neutral event that seemed to cause some fighting between IFP and ANC people. The MK party has accused the ANC of trying to intimidate it with violence during a by-election. So things are a bit tense right now, and I think it's very important that this leader is, in fact, going on trial, because this kind of stuff can't be tolerated if we are to remain a democracy. All right, let's move on to our next story. And this is a report published by a group from Finland based in Helsinki called the Center for Research on Energy and Clean Air. They say that the delays to the closing of South Africa's coal power plants will have a very serious effect on the health of thousands of South Africans. Their report gave a range of additional deaths that would come from closing the power plants later rather than sooner, with numbers between 20,000 and 50,000 people. However, they gave one scenario which was more specific, saying that not closing the facilities sooner rather than in 2035 or 2050, as some of them are planned to be closed, will result in 32,700 additional deaths, including 330 deaths of children under five, 100,000 asthma emergency room visits, 39,000 preterm births, 28 million days of work absence, and 40,000 years of living with a disability. Now, I think there's probably some truth to this stuff when you start to look at the statistical effects of various kinds of pollution, particularly some of the nasty stuff that comes out of coal power stations. There's some truth to that. But of course, the alternative scenario is not really given much consideration here, which is a world where there's more load shedding, a world where we don't have proper sources of alternative energy, or perhaps where we have more expensive energy because we've switched to more expensive renewable technologies that don't have the same reliability as these ones, as our coal power stations. And that has genuine human costs on a large scale as well. That's children who aren't able to be fed properly because their parents don't have jobs, because the economy hasn't grown. That's people who will suffer from all sorts of social dysfunction as a result of greater poverty and economic stuff. So reports like this kind of do annoy me because, yes, they do have a point, but they're also not really, I think, properly addressing the counter argument, which is that the reason we use coal is because we can't really afford the alternatives as much as we'd like. Makone, what do you make of this?
That's true. It's back to the question of the trade-offs, right? So we trade off clean energy and those cases of asthma and air that's not at the quality that needs to be. But there's a lot hanging on the other side of that argument, which I think you touched on. Poverty and starvation is another thing that South Africa is battling, right? Which you would definitely subject people to if you were to today just close down all these power utilities that are coal-based. There's also something to be said about the calls by developed countries on developing nations to leapfrog the fossil fuels stage and move straight into renewables. And what that does in serving developing countries and their potential to grow does absolutely nothing, right? Because, of course, renewable energies are in development and they'll grow to the stage necessary to have the sort of energy density that's required to run and develop economies and emerging markets, but they're just not at that stage yet. And so I'm also annoyed by these sort of studies, Nick, because another thing that I question whenever I engage them is the rigor and the robustness of their investigations. Can they really, and which they never seem to do in my estimation, establish a causal link between specifically Letabo, let's say, because it was named in the report, that Letabo power station.
The report says that Letabo power station alone will cause 10,000 additional deaths.
There we go. Can they link Letabo to those deaths? Can they actually establish that causality there? And they're just using generalizations and perhaps some modeling. But I would like to see a lot more rigor because a lot hangs in these decisions. A lot of consequences, a lot of weighty consequences emerge here where you just say that a country like South Africa should shut down its biggest sources of power.
Now, proponents of renewable energies and clean energy will no doubt say that, well, actually clean energy is cheaper than coal stuff, or is cheaper in the long run, or something like that. And I think the practical experience of countries that have heavily embraced renewable energies, the most notable example being Germany, suggests that that's not really the case. And of course, the other thing that always annoys me about this discussion is that nuclear power seems absent from the discussion, as in many ways, it sort of, although it has a very expensive initial investment cost and can take quite a long time to build, at the end of the day, it is usually cheaper than most other forms, uses relatively little fuel, and its environmental consequences are very low. It doesn't produce a lot of carbon dioxide or extra gases and things into the air. And nuclear waste is much easier to deal with than many opponents of nuclear energy would suggest. So I really wish that would be more about energy discussions.
Agreed, Nick. There's also the case that optimal energy needs to be three things, which I think you and I will agree nuclear energy is, right? It needs to be reliable, clean, and cheap, right? So nuclear would tick all of those, but the others from coal to renewable will only tick two. So at any point in time, we're trading off advantages and disadvantages. But right now, coal gets us to prosperity quicker than renewables. And I think that should be at the center of every single one of these discussions about phasing out fossil fuels. It should be centered around human flourishing and human prosperity.
Right. And look, I think there's a lot of space right now for renewable energies to take up some of the slack that has been created by Eskom, because Eskom has so badly managed its coal power plants. So I would like to see more private investors going in and seeing whether they can truly make our renewable energy more reliable and more affordable than Eskom's coal power plants. Right now, we need pretty much whatever electricity we can get. But let's not, cut our legs off here just as we're beginning to heal. Because I think that would be a complete disaster. All right. Thank you very much for listening today. We hope that you found this show interesting. We will be back tomorrow. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.